Welcome, everybody, to this first episode in the series Talk in Equality. My name is Gary Hickey, and I work with the Agora Digital Centre, the online centre for connecting people with research. And I'm delighted to be the guest host in this first episode of this podcast series. In this episode, I'm going to be talking to the founders and the owners of this podcast series. And they're three representatives from three different community organisations. And I'm going to be exploring their motivations for doing this series and their experiences of health and social care research in terms of engagement, involvement, and indeed participation. So let's introduce our three guests today, Lillian and Nusri and Patrick. So if you'd like to introduce yourself, and I'll begin with Lillian first. Could you just say something, Lillian, about who you are and the organization that you represent?
Thank you, Gary. My name is Lillian Dowla, and I work for an organization called Ethnic Minorities in Canterbury, which was formerly known as Ethnic Minority Independent Council. I work on a voluntary basis, and I am a development worker. EMIC, as it's commonly known, works in Canterbury mainly, but also we've worked with groups in Thanet and in Dover. We work to promote cultural diversity. We support initiatives that are reducing inequalities, both in health and social care. And we also work to improve and empower individuals in the communities. We raise awareness of the issues and challenges that are faced by minority ethnic communities in those areas to those providing services. And we work as a voice or as a conduit between the main service providers and the communities. Most of our work is done with other grassroots community groups. And we work mainly with the Chinese community. We work with Romanian community, Polish community. We have been also joined by the Ukrainian community of late. And we also have the African communities and the Nepalese communities that are based in here. Our work is challenging as of late. We've had many other new communities joining us, and we've tried to help them to settle in into the area. Most of the times we do promote harmony between our own communities, but also between communities and the local groups. Social inclusion and health and well-being are the other things that mainly we talk about.
Brilliant. Thank you, Lillian. And Nusri, could you introduce yourself and your community organisation?
Hi, Gary. I'm Anusri Biswas Sasidharan, and I'm co-founder and co-director of Bridging Change, along with Nora Mazawi. And Bridging Change is an independent organisation with its intention to build up strong, sort of dynamic and successful Black, Asian, minoritised ethnic groups and communities and organisations. We're really keen on seeing people build up their infrastructure, but also really challenge inequalities, particularly health inequalities, but also around food access and representation more widely. I mean, it really started around trying to address some of the disparities around organisations trying to find their way. But we also do a lot of research and engagement work with communities within Brighton & Hove, but we do expand into Sussex as well. So that's a sort of a quick sort of overview of what we do.
Lovely. Thank you, Anusri. And we're picking up on some of those issues as we go through the podcast. And Patrick, please introduce yourself and indeed your community organisation.
Hello, my name is Patrick Nyikawaranda, and I am the Director of Research and Leadership at Diversity Resource International. And just a little bit about Diversity Resource International. It is a non-profit social enterprise that supports ethnically diverse and migrant communities. And we have four core activities, which are community development, community research, leadership and enterprise, and training towards equity and inclusion. And one of the things that we believe in, that these activities aim to reduce inequality and promote a fair and inclusive society. And just lastly, really, we work widely with the public and voluntary and community organizations to bridge the linguistic and cultural communication gaps and to raise awareness of the impact of structural discrimination and to bring about what you may call greater social justice.
Brilliant. Thank you, Patrick. I'm lovely to see you all today. So I'll start with you, Patrick, going on to questions proper, if you like. What has motivated you to do this podcast series on inequalities in health?
I think basically from a personal and professional capacity, and one thing that in my role at DRI I have encountered is that there is almost this lack of understanding around the needs of the community based on what they express. And so one thing that I think this podcast should help to raise our community's needs from us, the way we see it rather than the way someone is reporting it. And also something around engaging widely with other, I guess, organizations and also researchers in addressing some of these needs, because we live in a society where we are interconnected, and these stories that we share will actually help not only us, but then everyone else in our communities.
Thank you, Patrick. And Lillian, turning to you, is that similar to your motivations, or would you like to add something to that?
Yes, very similar to Patrick. On a personal level, I'm part of the ethnic minority communities, and we've realized and we live really the inequalities in health. We have that firsthand experience of that. But also working with community groups for over 30 years, I think now I've been working within the communities. And one of my roles when I started working with the communities was as a managing a national program for African communities on HIV. And in that project, we soon realized the need for research and being investing everything that we were doing on research to help with developing the services that we were doing. And living in Kent and working in Kent, I soon realized that there was little or no research that we could use to develop services that are specific for the, I think, minority groups. So that really increased the need for us to look into research, and also my interest in finding out more about research and how we can use research as a development worker to develop services that are targeted to the communities that we were looking for. So through my engagement with the National Institute of Health Research, I realized that working with that group, we would be able to do work or some of the research that was needed with the help of the National Institute of Health Research. And hence, my motivation and being here today is through those connections and networking.
Brilliant. Thank you, Lillian. And Anusri, have you got anything to add to that in terms of your motivations? Are they similar, different?
Oh, very much similar. I mean, I think because I've been involved in health inequality and examining health inequalities and in social care, it's certainly been in the forefront of my mind, but it felt like there wasn't much of a space for it to be heard. I mean, I think COVID-19 was really a catalyst, you know, like coming together of really looking at it more nationally and more broadly. I think people were more open to listening to health inequalities as it affected Black, Asian, minoritized people. And it really, I think it gave us an opportunity to do some more investigation in the area, which was really nice. And so really have an opportunity to understand where people and communities, how they were experiencing those health inequalities and get a bit more precise information. So I think this felt like a very timely podcast, really, just to have an opportunity to see what colleagues are saying and also really, you know, verbalise some of the things that we've been talking about for years.
Brilliant. Thank you. And of course, it was during COVID-19, wasn't it, that we all got to, or rather I got to know you, because we sort of started meeting up, didn't we, during that time. When I say meeting up, we weren't breaking any curfew rules at all. It was all online. I just want to be clear about that. Anusri, I'm going to ask you this question, and it's a very big question, but as a representative of a community organisation, what are some of the challenges that you have faced in doing research? And I know that's a very broad question, so please interpret that as you will.
I think often it is about not having opportunities to do the work and for it not to be funded. So a lot of the work was often sort of doing work. It was extra work for us. So we might be doing a piece of work that was unconnected to health inequalities. So we were really keen to draw some of those linkages together. So that was some of the frustration, that there wasn't enough momentum behind it. So I think that has changed somewhat. There feels to be a sea change, and I hope that it goes beyond flavour of the month and that it becomes something more consistent. So that's some of the challenges we face. And also a major one is that often Black-led organisations like ourselves were not given the opportunity to do the work. So often others who were not Black-led organisations, who were not, I would say, agile or flexible enough to do the work as the way I feel we do the work, knowing those communities really well, it was a real barrier to, I think, research in that area more generally. And I feel there's a real disconnect from academia to community development organisations. I felt that was a real problem, which I think also, I hope, is changing as well. So those are kind of some of the barriers I think we face. It's a frustration, but I do feel things are changing. I can see that our local ICS, for instance, they're putting some investment into looking at health inequalities, as are our councils. But I'd like to see more, because I think we're a long way behind.
I was going to probe you further than that, Anusri, because you said on quite a positive note there that you felt there was some change. And I was just going to ask you to explore a little bit about some of those changes.
Well, including this project that we're working on now, Reaching Out, I think is a perfect example of a recognition of this area. So NIHR ARC, you know, I think that they've reflected on some of this. I think they're at the start of their journey, but it's been great, you know, working with you, Gary, and Lillian and Patrick, just to have a space to have these discussions. But likewise, as I said, I think they're just awakening. And I think there was something about, you know, it was George Floyd, COVID. I mean, I know there've been lots of discussions about that, but there's something about that time that really made us focus on it in a way that we've not had an opportunity. And I think if those two huge events, you know, worldwide events, had not happened, I'm not sure we would be having these discussions.
I suspect you might be right there, Anusri. And just for the benefits of the listener, when Anusri mentioned Reaching Out, that was a funding scheme from the Centre for Engagement Dissemination at the National Institute for Health and Care Research, the NIHR. And we originally got some funding from them to develop, if you like, this working group. And we've done many things together, including various presentations and indeed this podcast series. Patrick, over to you about challenges you've faced in doing research.
Yeah, sure. As a community organization, I think Anusri touched on this and something around funding, because we are aware that it costs money for data collection and data analysis and also dissemination of our findings. And so that has been a major challenge, I must say. And one of the initial challenges we faced, but something that I will say, due to the resilience and resourcefulness of our communities and our organization, really was an initial lack of expertise. But like I said, due to our resilience and resourcefulness, we actually set up a group of our community researchers and a community research team to actually manage some of the research areas that were a challenge for community-led organizations. So although it was a barrier initially, it's now turned to a strength, because we've since built upon that as well. And I guess another challenge has been the wider lack of support for small community-led organizations. And when I say lack of support, it's lack of investment in some of our projects, or lack of professionals or academics working with us initially. So that has been a challenge. And I guess on the other, I think something to add on to that is like a lack of being taken seriously and in terms of the research that we've done. And that has been a challenge to us and to our communities, because our communities have said, this is the research that we want done, and these are the findings that we are actually wanting to be put across on the table for action to be taken. But then you've had this question saying, well, you're a community-led organization. What do you know about research? What do you know about these things? So, yeah, it's been a real big challenge. But like I said, our communities are resilient. Our communities are resourceful. So we are breaking down those barriers slowly.
So when you say that the needs of the QT wasn't taken seriously, are there forums, do you think, that you can go to present your case, to present what you would like a research undertaken? Or are you saying there's an absence of those forums? Or is it that they're there and you're just not being taken seriously?
I would say yes to all those three answers, all those three questions. I mean, they're not really fit for purpose, for starters. And even though we are sometimes invited to some of these forums, it almost feels like it's just a tick box exercise to say, yes, we've got a community-led organization. Yes, we've done our job. But also, I think I have to say on a positive note, again, just echoing Anusri in the sense that the Reaching Out project has been a positive experience for us. It helped us talk about the needs of the community, or rather, you know, just be the representative of our communities on this project. And it has also helped us almost like gain confidence and reach out to a wider audience. So that has been positive. And it's something that we as an organization, and I think I'm speaking on behalf of my colleagues here today, that we can continue engaging in, because it's a perfect example of how, you know, best to work with each other. And we've built strong bonds as organizations as well as a result of this. And so we are having a collective voice when it comes to addressing the needs of our communities.
Thank you, Patrick. And just for clarity for the listeners, when you talk about community researchers, you mean members of the community, don't you, who are actually undertaking the research and that presumably been trained up as researchers?
Indeed. Members of the community that have been trained in research methods and undertaking and analysing and also disseminating the information and feeding back especially to their communities.
Fantastic. Thank you, Patrick. And Lillian, challenges for you.
I come to this question, I think, from a community side and not as a research organisation. So more a community that needs research or needs to be researched for that matter. And for us, it's been the lack of awareness that there is even any research that's being done. We, I think through knowing the NIHR, we've known that there is the ARC. You know, we didn't know about that before, but we understand there's an arm in Canterbury. So it's that lack of any knowledge of what is going on. We don't know what kind of research has been done. We know there's no little or no research that has been done within our communities because we would have known about it. So that lack of any research has meant that when we're developing our own services, we have little or nothing to base on, which makes them a bit weaker. And hence, funding becomes more difficult to get because we don't have that strong evidence on which to base any of our proposals. We use very much anecdotal evidence. We have people who are interested in doing research. We have a few people who have done some research, but I think the acknowledgement and giving it the credibility that it deserves. I remember during COVID, there was research that was done with the Zimbabwean community. But it was something that was initiated by a few people from the community. And I remember them trying to get it recognized as, you know, a credible research. So what Patrick talked about being taken seriously when we do that research has been a challenge. And of course, the lack of the genuine involvement of the community members in doing any research is a challenge. And we know it makes the research a bit more expensive, but I think because it makes it more appropriate and more effective, it's worth giving out more of that money to do the research. So yes, the other thing is that the few people who have come to us to find out anything have expected us to do it for nothing, without any investment in the organization, without a thought about the time that we take to engage with the communities. So those are some of the challenges that we have had.
Thank you, Lilia. And anyway, you started touching on my next question, and it's another big question. And I was going to ask about your experiences, positive or negative, in terms of engagement, involvement, and participation in research. And I'll stay with Lillian because you started getting onto those things.
Yes, thank you. The definite lack of the genuine involvement by the communities that are being researched has been an experience where with the little research that has happened, people do come and get their information, but we also don't get much feedback. That has been a big issue in that people are left thinking of what happened to that information. Is it worth actually getting involved the next time that we are asked? So it gets harder and harder for those who want to do the research within the communities if nobody comes back to give them the feedback. And also there being no action that is followed up to say that this service was actually developed because of the results of this research. So there isn't that connection. I think ignoring the skills of the community. A lot of the people in the community have the skills that can help with the research. And I think those have been ignored in that everybody who comes in to do the research comes in with their researchers, with their people, and they're the ones who can do research. But I think as we discussed during some of our sessions in the Reaching Out group, that using those people within the community as community researchers, training them as community researchers and living that skill within the community helps the research to reach further, because the effects of that research to reach further. Because I believe that when research is done, there should be something that's left within the community that they learn or they can act on, or, you know, something that's left for the community.
Lots of interesting things you were saying there. I want to pick up on one of them. And it was about, I think, from what you were saying, is there something here, and I don't want to put words in people's mouth, about ownership of the research. So you and Patrick in particular have spoken about community researchers and the skills they have, and then the action that follows. Is there something about ownership of the research that you would like, that is perhaps absent at the moment?
That's very true. There is absence of that. And by involving the community feels that it owns, you know, that research. It's a collaborative work with the researcher or the principal researcher who's coming to do that research. And it also helps on fatigue of being researched, you know. They're getting involved in it. They don't feel like they're things that are being used. So definitely there is the need for the communities to own that research. And it also helps for it to be more meaningful to them.
Lovely. Thank you, Lillian. Nusra, I'm going to come to you because I know one of the things you've spoken a lot about in the past is about engagement and perhaps how the research community, indeed funders, aren't always very good or appropriate in their engagement. But please, again, answer the question as you see fit. But I know that's something that I'm sure you want to talk about.
Yeah, no, it is. And also I'm reflecting on my own research experience as well, because I've not got it right either. And I think when you're a part of a system, if you're part of a project, you just go in and you go out, especially if it's an area you're unfamiliar with. So it's quite interesting and it feels very, so you're helicoptering in, do your piece of research and engagement. Make really good relationships, because, you know, I really actually genuinely really like people and I think they get on with me. I think I'm not too offensive. And what happens? I take advantage of that and then I leave because I want to do my research. And actually what I didn't do, reflecting on in those particular projects, was, you know, do a lot of, you know, feedback, which is what you're supposed to do. And, you know, very much how, you know, it's my learning, but it was not a part of the process then. And when it was successful, I mean, I had done it before because, you know, I did community development work, which is perhaps one of my favorite jobs ever, where I went out into the community and you talk to people and you create relationships. And actually, it's not just about coming and doing some research, because I have already made those relationships. And funnily enough, it didn't even require a great deal of money to do it outside of that, because it was already there. And it was quite lovely, really. It felt very natural, felt very good, and it felt very comfortable. There was no pressure to do a project and then that's it, I'm not having a relationship with you, because those relationships were quite genuine and we were taking people through their own pathways, you know, through education. It was a lovely piece of work, and advocacy and research were just other parts to it, so that was really good. So that's reflecting on my sort of practice, which, you know, has been problematic, I have to admit that and be honest. So I have some sympathy with researchers. However, my sympathy is less so with the funders, because I think they need to be a little bit more generous and a little bit more, you know, horizon seeking, you know, they need to look a little bit broader and have some sort of a vision as to where this is going, because I think there's a bit of irresponsibility doing these and jumping in and out, because for community development organizations, we are struggling. And a lot of the time, you know, we work for nothing as well. So if we don't have a project, we just carry on. I mean, particularly to us at Bridging Change, we will just carry on. I'm sure our colleagues will too, because we know what that's like. But we are trying to make moves. So we've had really lovely relationships. I just want to also say IDS, which is the Institute of Development Studies, is really interesting. It's a new piece of work. They're not used to working in this country, but we're working with them. And they're using some of their development sort of tools and approaches that they use elsewhere, where there is a sense of recognizing privilege. And it's really quite interesting. And so we have become almost like, not the research, but they understand where we are positioned in the research. There's a real sort of prioritizing of community development groups. So they will sort of push us forward and say, actually, we push you forward to experience, say, like going to Brazil, which we will be going to, or going to Toronto. I don't want to show off, but it was really nice because they put us forward. They didn't think that we just do the work here and then they go off and do the fancy stuff. So it's been wonderful to be a part of that, because we feel really valued.
I was going to jump in there, Nils, because I think some of the things you mentioned there, it seems to be that importance of building those relationships. And again, I'm just putting this out there as a statement, I guess, rather than a question. And it feels to me perhaps the system, the culture, the environment in which we work doesn't put sufficient value on that. And yeah, I don't know if you've got any sort of comment on that, if that is how you feel, or indeed any of you feel. But from what Nils was saying, that's a key thing that I picked out there. And it's when you feel valued, I think everybody gets more out of the enterprise.
Definitely. I think it's you also want to give more when you feel valued. I mean, I think we all do. When we're valued, we will more likely to give more to the project and get best value as well. And I think, you know, I think I mentioned it before, you know, when people say they come in, take your ideas or something, which does happen. We've had ideas completely ripped off. And that is really frustrating. I'm less likely to want to work with that person. And I think I said, you know, there's some really fabulous chefs out there who write these great books because they go out to these amazing places and go, right, that's beautiful curry that you've made here. Let's take some of these ideas from you. We'll steal your generations of information, put it in my book, monetize it, sell it. I'm sorry. I think that time has passed, and I think we're a bit wiser to it as well. We're not innocents anymore. We want to be valued as well. And I think we have a right to ask for that. I think it's the least that we are able to expect in that relationship.
Thanks, Nursery. And Patrick, I'll just remind you of the question again, because it feels like a long while ago. So what has been your experience of research in terms of engagement, involvement and participation?
Well, I think I will say I totally agree with what my colleagues have just said in terms of the experiences. They seem to be the same that we've experienced. And I think I will have to say that I am actually a researcher in terms of my main job, an academic researcher. So again, Anusri has touched on that in terms of her experiences are similar to mine as well. There are things that I've done right and that there are things that I've done wrong. And I do sympathize with some of the researchers coming into the communities to conduct research. However, in terms of, I guess, involvement, engagement, participation, it is expected that our communities are approached when it comes to the subject matters around health inequalities especially. And so some of those involvement and engagement opportunities have really been horrible, I must say, terrible even. And I always talk about the good, the bad and the ugly. And that's how it's really been, that some of them have been good, yes, some of them have been bad, but some of them have really been outright ugly, because it's just people interested in collecting information and just leaving communities or participants, and not even a courtesy of providing support information, especially when it comes to sensitive subjects. But there have been really, really good working relationships with some individual researchers as well as institutions. And these are something I think that I would say we value a lot. I think there's been talk about being valued, feeling valued. And yes, indeed, we do give a whole lot more to these relationships that are built as a result of people being genuine, people caring enough. And it's not just a piece of research, but this is talk about people's lives, people's futures. So that we do appreciate. And through that, I guess, in terms of engagement, we have built these relationships and this reputation that we are an organization that is locally connected, but also nationally involved now and internationally involved. So our networks and our core projects, and I think, well, just our ethics really around ensuring quality for everyone, has been something that's attractive to researchers and research institutions. So we are increasingly working alongside institutions on funding applications. And this is the kind of engagement that we were looking for when we started our research, to say, listen, we want to research these issues with you, alongside you. We want to be equal partners in this, in this research. So I would say that's really, really been positive and encouraging, not only for us as an organization, but also encouraging for the participants that we then go into the communities to talk to about the research, because they're saying to us that, okay, you are actually conducting this research alongside the academic researchers. And that is all they ever wanted for us and for them, that their people in the community are actually undertaking this research. So I will say I'll end up on a positive note on the process of engagement, that I think the relationships that we've built, personal and I guess professional as well, have really been inspirational in terms of us continuing the engagement work as well.
Brilliant. Thank you. I'm going to stick with you, Patrick. I've got one final question. So what would you change, if indeed anything, and I'm sure you would, to ensure that community development organisations have a greater influence in health and care research?
I will start off by saying that they are taken seriously, for starters. And for me, I think just knowing very well that we've worked really, really hard to produce a piece of our research and we are presenting it, it is not our voice, but the voice of our communities. So do take that research seriously. And I will say, again, it's been said so many times around, the lack of funding for community development organizations. And there is actually a need to fund directly core activities around health research within our organizations. So, and we're not talking about 1 month, 2 month investment. We're talking about long-term investment for our organizations. And I think I'll stop there, because my colleagues are the more wiser ones when it comes to making recommendations.
Thank you, Patrick. Lillian, what do you think?
I agree with Patrick about the support that community organizations need, and also the involvement of the community members, so that they are involved right from the beginning of thinking up to do that research up to the end in writing the report, and that kind of collaboration. I would like to see researchers and the community, I think like what Anusri was talking about, that kind of engagement and building those relationships. And for probably the researchers and the funders to realize that that takes time. A lot of the time they come with this time-limited research, but they have not factored in the amount of time that it will take to engage with the communities. Some communities will be easier to engage with, so it takes a shorter time, but other communities are much harder to engage with. I would also like, in terms, I think you did ask about health and care, for research to be done with both the social care and the health care, because the social issues that affect a lot of the minority ethnic groups affect their health. And I would like to see both those types of research being carried out and seeing the connection between the two. action research, if I understand it, where there is some, actually, I think Patrick alluded to that, where at least you give some information about the issues that you're researching for. You leave some information so that people learn about it more. But I would like to see the long term that Patrick was talking about, whereby it is some research and action going on within that, so that there's that continuation between the research and the result of the research and the action that's being taken as a result of that research.
Brilliant. Thank you, Lily. And Anusri, have you got anything to add to that?
Of course. I've got something to add. Yes, and I don't know if you recall that we did a report in December 2021 that really did explore some of these issues. And I mean, I think both my colleagues, Lillian and Patrick, have really hit the nail on the head. You know, there is something about investing in community organisations, and also things around being co-applicants, where you're really taking a part, really involved and really part of the structure of that. And not just at the point of, you know, handing that proposal in beforehand, you know, so you have those discussions and really ask those questions when you have the chance, and perhaps build things into the research itself. I mean, I do think I have to be crass and say it is about investment and money. We do need that because we just can't run otherwise. And also there needs to be a shift in the power relations, you know, and that's where things like co-applicants is really helpful. And just having, I think I'm seeing a little bit more of that, but I'd like to see much more and much more embedded, you know, and that should be one of the questions that people are asking when they're thinking of doing, you know, a piece of research. Who could we bring into this to make our research more appropriate, more meaningful to the communities that we're looking at, you know, and not just, you know, treating people like subjects. Actually, I don't think that's, I don't think you're able to do that anymore. And having experts by experience, for instance, I could carry on, but I will stop there.
Brilliant. Thank you. Well, it's always great talking and working with you all. So thank you, Lillian and Anusri and Patrick. And thank you to the listeners for listening to the first in this series of podcasts and Talk in Equality. In future podcasts, Patrick and Anusri and Lillian will be hosting the podcast. They'll be talking to funders of research and indeed researchers. And then we're going to, us four, we're going to get back together again at the end of the series, just reflect on the podcast series and the responses we got from funders and researchers, and see where we are. But thank you again for listening, and goodbye.